Good morning, early birds. You've caught the Weekend Worm, a special edition that recaps the top stories of the week. It's a heads up on what the newsroom is following for the upcoming week. It is the second weekend of April 2026, Saturday the 11th and Sunday the 12th. I'm Carl Lengel, your host. Saturday kicks off YPR's Spring Fund Drive. If you're a regular listener to the Worm podcast, you've already figured out the advantage to this delivery method. Listening and waiting for the broadcast to get to the information doesn't always suit your circumstances, and the podcast is up to date, on demand, complete, and on your schedule. While this podcast is simply a package of all today's news stories broadcast on YPR, it does take time to assemble, and the Weekend Worm is our laboratory as we develop news programming for our new environment. The point is, the news staff works very hard every day, weekends too, to deliver the information we find our listeners say is critical to staying informed in these chaotic times. If you listen to The Worm, please spread the word, and if you can, throw a little coin our way. We promise we won't waste it on coffee. Yellowstone National Park will open select entrances in Montana and interior roads this week. The park announced in a news release the north entrance at Gardner and the west entrance at West Yellowstone will open Friday, April 17th at 8 a.m., weather permitting. From the north and west entrances, visitors will be able to access Mammoth Hot Springs, Lamar Valley, Norris Geyser Basin, Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone, Old Faithful, and the northeast entrance at Silvergate and Cook City, Montana. Visitors are reminded to bring appropriate footwear and clothing for winter conditions because many trails and boardwalks are still snow-covered at this time of year. Do expect limited services in the spring. Be prepared. Park officials report additional roads in the park will open throughout May, weather permitting. Montana saw below-average snowpack this winter, and other western states have seen record-breaking lows. As Laura Hatch with Big Sky Connection reported this week, scientists are warning this may be a glimpse of what's to come.
Montana has fared better than other areas in terms of snowpack, and recent precipitation has helped. Even so, Boise State University geosciences professor Alejandro Flores calls this season's snow drought historic, with a triple whammy hitting the state and the western U.S.
December and February were normal precipitation, but very warm. January was a little bit closer to normal temperatures, although it was still warmer, but just no precipitation. And that is really what has set us back in terms of the snowpack.
Flores says river basins in the Yellowstone region were closer to normal, but the snowpack below 8,000 feet plummeted in the western U.S. He's concerned about how widespread the snow drought is and adds there are few, if any, historical comparisons. He believes the West is starting to get an idea of what the future will look like and says states like Montana need to plan for less snowpack. I'm Laura Hatch, reporting.
The Northern Rockies is expected to have a normal springtime wildfire season despite the warm winter and low snowpack. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien filed this report.
The National Interagency Fire Center in Boise says major wildfire activity is not expected this spring. That's not an ironclad guarantee, but early indicators are not raising any red flags. NFSI says this past winter's abnormally low snowpack does not reflect the near-normal precipitation that's accumulated in the soil since last fall. Dry, warm, and windy conditions triggered multiple large fires in early March, but the agency says expected cool and wet weather, combined with warm and dry spells, supports a normal fire forecast for April. In fact, no substantial changes are anticipated through June. NFSI's extended outlook suggests normal fire activity throughout the Rockies in July. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
Environmental groups are challenging the federal approval of a mining exploration project near Libby. As Montana Public Radio's Ellis Julin reports, the groups have concerns over the potential impacts to the surrounding wilderness area.
Six groups are suing the U.S. Forest Service's decision to permit the Libby Exploration Project. The project, carried out by Hecla Mining Company, will expand an existing underground mine shaft to survey for silver and copper ore. The groups are concerned about the site's location underneath the Cabinet Mountains Wilderness Area. Durf Johnson is with the Montana Environmental Information Center, one of the plaintiffs in the litigation.
MEIC and our partners are unfortunately having to go to court. And the reason is that this mine is just an awful idea.
Johnson says the Forest Service did not sufficiently address the threats posed by the exploration project, particularly to endangered species and drinking water in Libby Creek.
It's very likely going to impact some of the cleanest water that we have here in Montana and in the lower 48. It's a refuge for a very small and threatened population of grizzly bears and bull trout.
This is not the first time legal challenges have been brought against a project at this site. Johnson says although it's an exploration, it would likely lead to a mine being built if Hecla finds a sufficient ore body. The groups are requesting a judge order the Forest Service to reevaluate the potential harms. In Missoula, I'm Ellis Julin.
A Gallatin County coroner's inquest has determined an officer involved shooting in Belgrade last year was justified. YPR's Kay Erickson has the details.
The coroner's inquest jury returned the verdict on Tuesday regarding the death of Devin Shearn, who was shot in an incident in late October 2025 near Crockett Way in Belgrade. A news release from the Gallatin County Attorney's Office reports the jury determined the use of force by a Belgrade police officer was justified. The inquest, a fact-finding proceeding and not a criminal prosecution, was led by Gallatin County Attorney Audrey Cromwell. After the jury reviewed the testimony, including from the officers involved, a pathologist, and an agent with the state's Division of Criminal Investigation, the 9-member jury concluded the officer involved reasonably believed his partner was at risk of serious bodily injury or death at the time force was used. The verdict concludes the formal inquiry into Shearn's death and no criminal charges will be filed in connection with the incident. In Billings, I'm Kay Erickson.
It is a midterm election year, and Montana's primary election is Tuesday, June 2nd. Yellowstone Public Radio and Montana Public Radio are working to share profiles on candidates running for federal office in 2026. These interviews begin airing and posting Monday, April 13th. We'll have a conversation between Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler and Ryan Bussey, Democrat running for Montana's Western U.S. House seat. You'll hear the interview at 7:44 Monday morning and again at 5:44 during All Things Considered. We'll continue the series with all participating candidates up through the primary election. Political stories developing. Last week, Montana's Attorney General called for Gallatin County to cooperate with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, more commonly known as ICE. It's part of a continuing effort to get local governments to comply with federal agents. Attorney General Austin Knudsen sent a cease and desist letter to the Gallatin County Attorney Office last week, demanding the county withdraw a policy preventing ICE from accessing the same confidential information as police and other law enforcement agencies. Gallatin County Attorney Audrey Cromwell says there is no such policy. In a news release, Cromwell said the county attorney's office denied a specific request last September from ICE for confidential records in a civil case. She says the county reviews each request individually, and the decision is not part of a countywide policy. According to the state, a sanctuary city law passed in 2021 requires local governments to cooperate with ICE. The story continued this week. Gallatin County's attorney is asking for a formal legal opinion on privacy laws and what information counties can and cannot share with federal agencies. In a news release Monday, Gallatin County Attorney Audrey Cromwell responded to a letter Attorney General Knutson sent last week demanding the county cooperate with ICE. Cromwell is asking the AG for a binding legal opinion. She says it should clarify whether counties can share private, non-criminal information with federal agencies outside of a court order. And it says it will be useful to all Montana counties in positions like this. A spokesperson with the Attorney General says the office is reviewing the response to determine any necessary next steps. And finally, in politics, the war in Iran is impacting more than gas prices. Montana's farmers have been hit particularly hard. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler reports price increases and market instability are straining producers already under pressure.
Since the war began, prices for farming basics have skyrocketed. The price of gas increased 74%. Fertilizer prices followed close behind. One nitrogen-based fertilizer saw a 50% increase in cost since February, and it's still rising. Montana Farmers Union President Walter Schweitzer says what he's hearing from their members is...
They're in trouble. I think there'll be less acres planted. I think that there'll be less fertilizer used, which will have impacts on yields.
According to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Montana is already losing planted acres this year. Nearly a million less acres will be farmed in 2026 compared to 2024. Schweitzer says it's a pivotal time for communities to support their local farms and ranches.
When you're going to the grocery store, ask for Montana-produced food. Ask for Montana-packaged food.
In Missoula, I'm Victoria Traxler.
Health issues across our area this week. Hundreds of miles of open road can stretch between expectant mothers and the maternity care they need in rural Montana. That's where trained non-medical professionals called doulas can help fill the gap. Montana was set to start reimbursing doulas through Medicaid this year, but federal cuts to the health program have put that plan on ice. Montana Public Radio's Austin Amestoy spoke with KFF Health News reporter Catherine Houghton about the impact.
So Montana was supposed to start reimbursing doulas through Medicaid this year. Lawmakers had voted for that plan in 2025. That's not happening now. Why not?
The state health department cited a big budget shortfall, and that was partially driven by higher than expected Medicaid costs. But the agency is scrambling in a few ways. They also noticed a big gap in federal Medicaid funds, both for this year and next year. And part of that comes from Republicans' massive tax and spending law, which I think at this point is best known as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. That law is projected to reduce federal Medicaid spending by about $1 trillion over the next decade. So Montana is definitely an early example of a program that's getting cut, but really it's likely just the start of stories like this.
You recently traveled to the Northern Cheyenne Indian Reservation in southeast Montana to help tell this story. Why did you choose to go there and who did you meet?
So I went there specifically because I kept hearing about Misty Pipe from people who are trying to improve access to maternity care. And so Misty actually offers her care for free, and that's around a day job and raising her and her husband's own 7 children. So she is really doing this because she knows what it's like to give birth in this community, from this community, when home is 100 miles away from the care you need. So she is trying to support parents in kind of their process of preparing for delivery and also give them the tools they need to be safe in that process, and then also the support they need after the baby has arrived.
And Misty would have been reimbursed through Medicaid for her services as a doula, it sounds like, but that isn't happening anymore, right?
Right. Yeah, I had actually linked up with Misty months ago, and my plan was to profile her as the state began reimbursing doulas through Medicaid. And she had hoped that reimbursement meant she could do this work full time and actually start getting paid for that, so she could afford to leave her day job and serve parents just throughout her community as they needed. Obviously, the story changed with the budget cuts.
What might the consequences of the cuts to Medicaid be for communities like Lame Deer or other tribal communities that lacked more robust health systems?
Right. So in this case, it means some people far from care are going to continue to face pregnancy alone. And we know that can be dangerous. Studies show that doula support reduces the rate of medical complications, and that's both in pregnancy and postpartum, so soon after the baby arrives. It's also important, though, to recognize that in many tribal communities, a lack of care coincides with centuries of systematic discrimination. And all of that really plays into longstanding health inequities that we've known about. And so Indigenous patients are supposed to be guaranteed access to health care through the federal agency called Indian Health Service. But the agency's clinics and hospitals are chronically underfunded and sometimes can't offer what seems like basic care, like dental work or delivering a baby. So when IHS falls short, Medicaid is often the fallback. Chipping away at that program means even further shrinking access to care.
So this expansion of Medicaid reimbursement into the doula space is on pause for now. Has Montana given any clarity on how steep the Medicaid cuts could get from here?
In short, the state has not provided much clarity. After telling me doula services weren't getting funding after all, spokespeople with the health department kind of went silent. They haven't answered any of my follow-up questions, which I've been asking for weeks at this point. But we do know that other services are on the chopping block. There's a category of something called optional Medicaid services. So those are services that states have deemed important enough to cover, but they're not required to by federal law. So what that means is that those types of services are at risk of losing funding, especially as states brace for federal Medicaid cuts. And those services can include doula care, it can include home health services, dental work, hospice. It's a pretty long list. And we know, too, that Montana health officials have said at this point, nothing's off the table. So Montana is definitely an early example of a program that's been cut, but really, it's likely just the start of stories like this.
Catherine Houghton is a reporter for KFF Health News. Catherine, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Conservative lawmakers in multiple states, including Wyoming, are passing legislation to increase protections for crisis pregnancy centers they claim are being attacked after the overturn of Roe v. Wade, according to reporting from KFF Health News. Eric Galatas with Wyoming News Service had this story.
CPCs provide some health-related services, but a big part of their work is trying to persuade women not to get abortions. House Bill 3 shields CPCs from having to meet medical standards that regulate facilities like Wellspring Health Access, the state's only abortion clinic. Wellspring President Julie Burkhart points to other laws that have made it much harder to provide reproductive health care.
On the flip side of that coin, year after year, the same folks who want that exemption for the CPCs try to legislate us out of business.
The Wyoming Supreme Court found that the state's total ban on abortions violated the fundamental rights of an individual to make their own health care decisions. But last month, lawmakers passed a 6-week abortion ban that remains in effect during legal challenges. The Life Choice Pregnancy Care Center in Cheyenne testified that HB 3, which was drafted by an anti-abortion legal advocacy group, was necessary to protect constitutional freedoms, freedom of speech, and freedom of conscience. This story was produced with original reporting from Jasmine Orozco Rodriguez for KFF Health News. I'm Eric Galatas.
Montana's presidential finalist was in Missoula this week. Jeremiah Shin participated in a public forum on campus Monday afternoon. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
Jeremiah Shin told faculty, staff, and students Monday that he has tremendous respect for the University of Montana.
This is a university that has chosen, and it's a choice, to be both a top-tier research university and an undergraduate-serving institution.
Shin, who's currently serving as interim president at Boise State University, is in the running to replace former UM president Seth Bodner. Bodner resigned earlier this year to run as an independent for the U.S. Senate. The 49-year-old Shin fielded a variety of questions during Monday's forum. The value of a liberal arts education was raised repeatedly. According to Shin, the humanities, philosophy, history, language, and the performing arts are in some ways more important now than ever. He says those cornerstone programs can be integrated into more career-focused education.
I see tremendous opportunities for interdisciplinary thinking. I see tremendous opportunities to integrate things that maybe other universities are not integrating yet. That's something that the University of Montana is uniquely positioned to talk about.
Montana Commissioner of Higher Education Clay Christian says a hiring decision is possible within the next couple of weeks. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
Montana is updating highway welcome signs along state lines after more than a decade. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche has more.
Governor Greg Gianforte presented the new look Tuesday at the Montana State Capitol. Over 11,000 people cast their vote for the new welcome sign, the first marker many drivers see once they've entered the Treasure State. The winning design is an angular silhouette of the state with Welcome to Montana inside it. The word Montana in bold red font crosses a circular icon of mountains and sandstone. The Montana Department of Transportation will begin replacing all 34 signs this month. In Billings, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
You can see the sign's new design on our website at ypradio.org. And we'll wrap today with a story that the locals hope goes away soon. The man who brought an injured wolf into a bar in Wyoming in 2024 was sentenced to 18 months probation and a $1,000 fine Wednesday. Cody Roberts will need to complete a substance abuse program and not possess alcohol or frequent bars. He also cannot possess firearms during his probation. Callie O'Hare is a reporter for the Pinedale Roundup who's been covering this case.
I think that the division, the nastiness, the vitriol that has come from all corners of the world through the internet has really put such a bad taste in people's mouths here. And I think that the one sentiment that everybody maybe can share today is that they're glad that it's over.
Roberts can appeal his sentencing in the next 30 days, which was reached after a plea agreement. That's the Weekend Worm for this second weekend of April 2026. We'll have another episode of The Worm Monday, and we'll keep the weekend editions coming too. I'm Carl Lengel. Have a great weekend.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.